You are listening to a talk given at the Brisbane City Bible Forum. We hope you enjoy the presentation.
So last year, our Prime Minister, Malcolm Turnbull, had this to say. He said, "I don't believe my wealth, or frankly most people's wealth, is entirely a function of hard work. Of course hard work is important, but you know, there are taxi drivers that work harder than I ever have, and they don't have much money. There's a lot of luck in life. And that's why all of us should say, when we see someone less fortunate than ourselves, that there but for the grace of God goes I." Now, however you feel about Mr. Turnbull, he's a very successful man. But what he says here is actually, it runs counter to what a lot of contemporary wisdom would say. You see, in Australia, we've got this idea that if you work hard, you'll be successful. But Mr. Turnbull's point is, you can work hard and still be poor. Now, he might call it luck, but I think Malcolm Turnbull's actually, his success has a lot to do with good timing. So, looking back into how he made his fortune, he invested in the company Oz Email back in the early 90s, when everyone was jumping on board with this whole internet thing. And he sold it back at the end of the 90s, 1999, for over 100 times as much as he had first invested, right before the dot-com crash. Timing is so important in success. Well, today we're going to think and look about this idea a bit more. This whole idea of success is largely a matter of timing, because we're going to find that that idea, that concept, is both liberating and frustrating. And we're going to look at that by examining the poem and the words here in Ecclesiastes 3, these ancient words. And that poem is, I don't know if you noticed it, there's almost this swinging to and fro of this poem. It's because it's like time itself. Time ends and flows like water. Waves on the shore, like sunrise, sunset, tick, tock. This poem in Ecclesiastes 3 marches on like the pendulum of some grandfather clock. Tick, tock, from one extreme to the next. There's a time to give birth, there's a time to die. There's a time to plant, tick. There's a plant, time to uproot, tock. And have a look at the topics it covers. A lot of these are just about matters of wise timing. Whether it's time to tear down or build up, scatter stones or gather them. I don't know why you would scatter stones or gather them or what's going on there, but there's a time for it. There's a time to keep, a time to throw away, a time to mend, a time to tear, a time to be silent, a time to speak. It's all about knowing the right time, the appropriate time to do any of these things. You see, recently we had a pineapple, and I thought, oh, I've seen online that you can cut the top off pineapples, plant them and they grow. I'm going to do that. So I chopped it off the top of the pineapple and pulled off the leaves like you're supposed to, put it in the water, and I was just about to plant it when I met this young lady who happened to own a nursery that dealt exclusively in bromeliads, which is the type of plant that pineapples are. And I told her, oh, I'm really excited that I've just met you. I'm about to plant a pineapple. She said, no, stop. Don't do that. Wait until after winter or it'll die. And then you'll have a whole bunch of pineapples in 5 or so years. But still, success, you see, is a matter of timing. Did you notice that as we're going through that reading before, that some of these examples, some of these topics are more about seasons of life? There are just seasons of weeping and laughing, seasons of mourning and dancing. And it's important to recognise that these things do come and go, that seasons come, seasons go. Earlier this year, we had a comedian come and share her story of how comedy had helped her in her life. She suffers from depression a fair bit, and She found herself in a state of depression one time, and she watched a comedy show and found herself laughing. And she said that in that moment, she realized that because she was laughing, that there was potential for more laughs to come, that her depression was a season, and that there would be a season of laughter that would one day come. It's important to recognize that, because that gives hope. As you're going through a time of mourning, it's good to realize that there is going to be a time of laughter, that as you're mourning, there will be a time where dancing will happen too. Finally, we get to those topics that just are a bit different. I'm not sure if you noticed them, but there they are: birth and death, and right at the end, war and peace. These are just topics that and time and season that we've got no control over. You can't choose when you're born. You can't choose when you die. They're just moments in your life, like big, heavy tent pegs that sort of stake out your life, that define you. And in a similar way, war and peace. The poem is very clear in the language it uses. War and peace aren't decisions that you make. They're seasons, they're episodes that come upon you in life. And so if you were born in 1896, you would have experienced a childhood of relative peace growing up. But when you became an adult, you would have found yourself running up some beach in Turkey, carrying a re-entry rifle. It's not to do with your choice. War came upon you, and so you fight. Time plays such a large part of success in our life. But it's important to recognize as we examine that poem that we don't control time. And so you have to learn to work within the rhythms of time. You need to learn how to work and be successful by observing those rhythms and working with them. Now, much of our contemporary wisdom misses this idea. It misses this concept. A lot of time management studies and a lot of time management thought of recent years has been all about efficiency. How can we get more done with less resources? But Matt Perman, in his book What's Best Next, highlights how this is a mistaken idea. Because if you can make best use of your time, that is so much more important than trying to do things quicker and easier. And it's much more important now that we've moved into knowledge work and moved away from industrious work. What I mean is, it used to be that you would turn up to work and what you had to do was clear. The machine was in front of you, you were taught on your first day how to use it, and so you just used it. And when it broke down, you were taught how to fix it, or you got someone who would do it. That was work. It was long, it was hard, but you knew what to do. But nowadays, a lot of work is actually about working out what I should be doing right now. A lot of our work is knowledge work. And so if we just get efficient at doing what we do, we can end up doing the wrong thing really, really well. In fact, Matt Perman says, simply speeding up doesn't help if you aren't going in the right direction in the first place. No, you need to know whether it's time to plant or whether it's time to pull up. You need to know whether it's time to build or time to tear down. It's no good pulling plants up when it's time to plant them. Success is largely a matter of timing. You can't control time, so you need to recognize the rhythms of time and act rightly in the moment. Now, one of the things that struck me as I was reading through this is that a lot of this is true not just for humans, it's true for all creatures living under the sun. So it's true for me, it's true for animals, it's true for my dog Hugo. This is my dog Hugo, and he enjoys life. He lives a good life. And let me explain how living successfully with the rhythms of time is the same as for us as for animals. Have a look there in sentences 19 to 22. What's going on here is basically, it's a thought experiment where the author has said, look, if you take away whatever else we know from the rest of the Bible, if you take away everything else that we know about God and just think about what we know purely based on the life under the sun. He says, well, we don't know what happens after death. From all we can see, what happens to animals is no different from what happens to us. And so there's nothing better to do than to enjoy the activities that are put before you in your life. That is our reward. Indeed, he says, the gift of God is to eat and drink and enjoy our good work. And that's Hugo's life. You see, Hugo is well fed. He gets his dry kibble and he also gets nice, big, juicy bones, which he prefers as they are just a bit rotting. That's when he likes them. He has a big bucket of fresh water. He has energetic kids and a middle-aged man to run around with. And he can lie in the sun all day. And if he wants to, he can bark at a dog or a bird or a person walking by, and then can go back to his spot in the sun, job done, and enjoy it. That sounds pretty good, right? I mean, it's a hard life being a dog. And I think that's what the author is talking about. If you can enjoy moments of your life, you can enjoy just existing, then that's a great gift of God. However, and you hear me saying it, don't you? So you're saying my life is no better than living like a dog? Well, in a sense, yes. However, there's something about us that doesn't feel right about, does it? There's something about us that where we kind of think, well, no, there's got to be more. There's something that drives us on, that pushes us to want more, to yearn for more, to strive for more. And this is how the preacher expresses it in our passage. In sentence 11, he says, God has made everything beautiful in its time. He has also put eternity in our hearts, but people can't discover the work God has done from beginning to end. So that word beautiful doesn't mean pretty. It means, okay, so you've cleaned out your shed, you've put everything in its right place, and you stand back and go, oh, beautiful. That's the word beautiful, right? Everything's in its right place. Everything's in its right place in time. However, eternity has been put in our hearts. I wonder if you ever had that sensation of eternity in your hearts. It's this, is that it? Kind of feeling that you sometimes get. Is this it? Is that all? Like when you're halfway through that beer or that coffee that you've been looking forward to, and the initial sip was just wonderful. But you're halfway through now and you're just noticing it's a bit more bitter than you're expecting it to be. I was looking forward to this, but is this it? Speaking of bitterness, I'm a Dragon supporter, and so I know a lot about bitterness. But in 2010, it was our year. We won the grand final. And I was there to watch my beloved Dragons dismantle the Roosters. It was fantastic. It was glorious. I had grown men smelling of beer and joy, embracing me, and just yelling with great exuberance. But there was just a part of me that said, this is great. But is this it? It's wonderful, but I thought it would be more. You see, the heights I was experiencing were nothing compared to the depths of despair that we went through in 92 and 93, 96 and 99. Boris Becker said it like this. People know Boris Becker, the great tennis champion. I was much more of an Ivan Lendl fan, so I didn't particularly like Boris Becker, but this is what he had to say. I had won Wimbledon twice before, once as the youngest player ever. I was rich. I had all the material possessions I needed. It's the old song of movie stars and pop stars who commit suicide. They have everything, and yet they are so unhappy. I had no inner peace. I was a puppet on a string. Or comedian Ray Romano, who said, right after Raymond, his TV, I think, what's it called? Everyone Likes Raymond, right? So the TV show went on for 9 seasons. Well, it's still, I think, running today. You can turn on the TV and find it somewhere. And this is what he said. Right after Raymond, I had a world is my oyster attitude. But I found out I don't like oysters. I had this existential emptiness. What is my purpose? Who am I? I had a big identity crisis. They have what George Parsons and Richard Pascal have coined as the summit syndrome. You might call it dissatisfaction with success. But have you had that experience? Have you had that time when you're maybe into your dream job 1 year in and it's just not what you thought would be cracked up to be? Have you had that experience where you're in a new relationship, but it's been going on for a while, it's just starting to get hard? Or maybe that day after you finish that major project and you kind of think, oh, well, what do I do now? Or maybe it's not so much dissatisfaction with your life. Maybe it's your hopes and dreams for your children, that they will be better than you have been, that they will have success that you never quite experienced, that they will be the scholar, they'll play for Australia, that they will be rich, they'll be popular, they'll be happy in a way that you just quite aren't. Or maybe you've looked out at the universe on a clear night. You've seen the expanse of space, the stars, and you've just marveled at the enormity of it all and have been struck at the insignificance of the little scratch in the dust that is your life. You see, as we stare into eternity, it mocks our efforts, it dwarfs our knowledge. There's something about us that means that we can't live like Hugo, my dog. You see, Hugo doesn't lie about in the sun wondering if he's going to make something of his life. He doesn't look up to the heavens and realise that he's insignificant. He doesn't despair at the injustice of the world. He never worries about his future. All the things that matter are the humans in his house, the food in his bowl, the fresh water, and the ability to bark at whatever comes his way. He does his good work and he lies down content. And when you have those moments of just pure existence, they're great, aren't they? That first bite of the chocolate, that first guzzle of nice, cool water on a hot day. It's a gift of God, is what the author's saying. But we keep being wrenched back from those experiences by the eternity in our hearts. You see, we're frustrated, finite beings with a sense of eternity. That's why we wail so hard against the end, against death. Now, it could just be that our consciousness is playing tricks with our perception. It could just be that our synapses are firing and telling us that there's more to life when there really isn't. Or it could be that this sense of eternity, our ability to discern the eternal works of God in the universe but not quite understand them, it could be that that's there. Because sentence 14, that we might be awestruck by God, that we might marvel at the one who made it all. It could be our brains playing tricks on us, or it could be the thumbprint of the divine in our lives. And in a sense, That's what Ecclesiastes, the whole book, is trying to do. It's a thought experiment of a kind where it's trying to view the world as if it was without God. It's asking the question, does this world make more sense with God, or does it make more sense if we recognize the role God plays in our lives? Well, where have you been today? What have we seen? We've seen that success is largely a matter of timing, working within the rhythms, the natural rhythms of life. But frustratingly, that's really hard to do. Malcolm Turnbull's right, there's a lot of luck involved. We can't discern the utter complexities of life and the world around us. Surely not effectively enough to navigate the complexity of life and ensure success. The best we can hope for is to eat, drink, and enjoy our lives. But we've also seen that that's just a little bit dissatisfying, because that's Hugo's life. And we want more than that. We have within us something that yearns for more, for fulfillment, that sense of eternity, the eternity in our hearts. And so today I wanted to provide us with a challenge. And then the challenge is to consider the words of Augustine, who said, God, you have formed us for yourself, and our hearts are restless till they find their rest in you. Now, if that is true, it's worth finding out more, isn't it? I mean, if it's untrue, then, and if we're nothing more than just composite chemicals just churning around and doing stuff, if the illusion of consciousness and of more than the life we experience is reality, then all well and good. I hope that you find some meaning in life and that you do enjoy the sensation of being alive, that you enjoy eating and drinking and whatever good you can do. However, if there's some truth to what we've been exploring, can I encourage you to look just a little bit more? So we've got these booklets, and I just wanted to show you a little bit about them. So they go through the book of Ecclesiastes. They go through some of the passages that we've looked at, and also more that we haven't. But they're also explorations with some questions that you might like to do with someone else. But you've got some people here. So Sam Chan, Kate Brax, who won the MasterChef back in 2011, Ian Harper, the economist, different people who have reflected on these words and have provided a bit of their understanding of what it means for them. So you can have some reading partners in the book, and also, can I encourage you, doing something like this might seem like a good idea right now, but you're going to go back to work soon. And the emails are going to start coming, the phone calls are going to start coming, business will resume, and this will fall off the to-do list. So can I encourage you to agree to meet up with someone, perhaps the person who invited you here today, and to have a coffee and just discuss what you're reading and what you're discovering as you read through this. Because if God has put eternity in our hearts so that we might see the awesome works that he's done, if there is a divine thumbprint on our lives, it's worth finding out what that means.